It's Wrecking Ball Radio.
Shut up and entertain me.
There's no rules. There's no rules.
Holy sh! It's amazing.
I see her sarcasm and nastiness grow.
This is Davin's Den.
Good evening, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than trying to buy a Subway sandwich.
Subway sucks. Yeah, I hope they're not your sponsors.
No.
Good.
No. You could join our chat room, the Den Pen, by going to davinsden.com and clicking on air. Number to call, 845-986-8804. I am your host, Davin Rosenblatt. That voice you heard was a comedian, a magician, and friend of the show, Kevin Lee.
Hey, what's up? A magician on the radio, man.
Perfect.
It's going to be fun, man.
Kevin will be playing the part of Pip Helix tonight. Pip is out abroad. I know she's abroad, but she's also abroad. Joe will be here, in about 45 minutes. So me and Kevin will hold it down until then. Joe will man the chat room when he gets there, because I can't run the show and man the chat room, so that'll be taken care of. Got a fun show for you. On the show, Joe and I just came back from the road. We'll tell you all about that. We had some fun. We're going to discuss if we're too dumb to self-govern. Comics in the news as the Ukraine elected a comedian as president. Well, I'm sure we have opinions on that.
Yeah.
Kate Smith and a God Bless America controversy. We'll see what other stuff we get to tonight. So, packed show. So, Kev, you've been traveling lately. What's on your mind? I leave this up to you, this portion of the show.
Well, man, we were talking on the phone the other day about the churches, man. I mean,
all right. Well, let's explain what the in Alabama.
Alabama, there were three church fires. Three historic black churches were burnt to the ground by a 21-year-old racist who's been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
He's a racist, and he burnt these churches down because he's a racist. Now, my problem is I was upset about the fundraising. There's no money being given to these black churches to kind of rebuild them.
Okay.
In the community, these churches, you know, have been standing for a long time, and they're old churches, and they're gone. And I'm disappointed not only just in with the public, but just the African American celebrities. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all the Oprahs and the P. Diddy's of the world. Nobody's sending
just the businessmen.
I mean, nobody's sending millions of dollars down there. Yeah,
AT, Herman Cain.
All these billionaires,
plenty
of athletes. So it falls on the back of African-Americans also to take care of your own. But we're talking about the church fire over in Paris.
All right. For those who don't know that, Notre Dame.
People that don't know that been under a rock.
Listen, sometimes people don't pay attention to current events. They got their own lives. I get it.
Okay. Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, so Notre Dame burned to the ground if you were
Well, it didn't burn to the ground. The roof is gone. A lot of damage. They were able to sell they were able to save a lot of the relics on the inside. It's a major tourist attraction in Paris, France. But in France, the richest, two or three billionaires have vowed to donate a huge amount of money, and other money is coming in. And Macron, who's the leader, who's the president of France, has said that they plan on having it rebuilt.
But we have a lot of money from Americans that are going there, you know. Also, I mean, Americans are donating millions of dollars also.
I mean, listen,
to France, to Notre Dame.
People are free to do what they want with their money. You know, the argument could also be made, the church, the Vatican has plenty of money. I mean, and I know sometimes it's tied up in legal fees, but I mean, they have a lot of money too. I mean, there's always a lot of money. I would argue that, listen, it's your money, you can do whatever you want, but we have real human beings suffering. We have Flint, Michigan. We have Puerto Rico. All these countries have homelessness. We have refugees all over the world. There are certainly places where you could donate your money if you wanted to. affect lives more directly. But again, it's your money. You can do what you want with it. It's your cause.
Yeah, it's not right. It's BS. We don't take care of each other, especially in this country. I mean, we're donate to another country before we donate to our own country.
No, I don't know. I don't think Flint, Michigan, has been.
People drinking dirty water in Flint. It's not government.
That's a government failure. That's a
government failure. But
it could be argued the Obama administration did not do enough, and that has certainly continued under the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are we on, 5 years? Where these people are still like drinking out of
drinking dirty water.
Well, no, they're drinking bottled water.
Bottled water.
Well, I mean that's you know, this is an American. You know, listen, America likes to fancy itself as number one. I would beg to differ. But, you know, if we're the number one, we got to be taking care of our own major cities. Flint's a major city in Michigan. Now, I've been to Flint, complete shithole. Not going to lie to you. It's dangerous as fuck. But that doesn't mean that the citizens there don't deserve what every American deserves, clean water.
Dangerous everywhere.
Flint is... I haven't been to every corner of Flint. What I've seen, I've stayed in Flint. I've worked in Flint. It's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
Now, nobody wants to live in a dangerous community. So you got to ask, what can we be doing to make this community better? The first thing I would say is get them some clean water. Yeah, I mean, that's...
There's going to be clean criminals.
No, but listen...
Healthy criminals.
Listen, if you can't take pride in where you're from, then it's hard to take pride and make sure that people behave properly and police themselves. And I would say, you know, it's hard to be prideful of a city where you live when everybody's moving out and you can't even take a shower or drink the water, or you're worried about raising your kids because there's high lead content.
Well, thousands of people are leaving New York, moving out.
Well, that's because of high taxes. Mm. Our taxes are ridiculous. Yes. That's a different thing.
That's a different story.
That's because we live next to New York City. That's what that is. So. Let me ask you this. Have you donated? Not that you're a multimillionaire, but I mean, every bit counts. Have you donated?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I'm not being a hypocrite here. I have not donated, but my point is I'm talking about the millionaires who...
But why can't everybody donate? Like,
I'm not saying everybody
can. You brought this up to me, so it bothers you.
It bothers me that these...
So send $20.
I probably will, Davin.
Good.
I might send more than $20.
But I'm just saying.
I might send $75 or $100.
Good. That's good.
That's in my budget.
Because I find it... it's not about sending a huge amount.
Yes.
But if you're gonna point the finger to others who have more means than we do, you should certainly be in the fight.
Well, no, I can't point my finger at a guy that's driving a car that's $400,000.
Right.
That won't send money.
Right.
Or Oprah, who's a billionaire.
Right. But you and I are doing okay.
I'm not saying I don't know if Oprah sent money. She probably sent money over to France.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't keep track of Oprah. But you and I are doing okay. If there was a cause, if there's a cause dear to our heart,
yeah,
you know. Even if it's $20, whatever it is, the point is you're in the game. Now, it is good that you're bringing attention to it on the air, because a lot of people might not have known for it, not known about it. And it is something.
Well, the president didn't bring it up that the 21-year-old racist burned down three churches.
That's his constituency, man. He's not. We've seen that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is nothing new.
Now, if three churches that were predominantly white were burnt down
by a Muslim,
or a Hispanic guy. It's all over. You know, he would have been tweeting the next day.
He's, you know, listen, this guy is purely motivated by self and politics. And, you know, I guess he doesn't think that is in his best self-interest. I don't know.
He's probably not.
I mean, you know, the argument could be like, well, the guy can't react to everything. Then you go look at his Twitter feed and he's reacting to nonsense. So it's like, no, you know what? The guy has time. Now, I don't know if he's tweeted about it. I haven't heard about it. So
I've done a little homework. He has not tweeted about it.
Yeah, you know, yeah. That's a failure to lead. But, you know, personally, I'm not surprised.
No.
I don't consider this man a leader of much, except, you know, the minority of the country, which has control of the Senate and the Oval Office, which is fine. But I don't consider him as somebody, and I've been saying this for years, somebody who I look to. Actually, I try to look away and hope my child doesn't look at him. I mean, this is not somebody who I hold in great esteem, and it doesn't, you know, and it has nothing to do with political affiliation. I mean, I just look at people by their morals. I said it time and again. You know, I did not agree with John McCain on a lot of things, but as a human being, there was a lot of things I could tell my daughter, go, look to this man.
Yes.
You know, you could look to. Even George W. Bush, I've talked about on the air many, many times. I thought he was an awful president, but I can even look in that administration and go, you know what? He was right on that. He did right there. He did the right thing.
So we're saying we'd take Bush back right now if he would come.
Oh, yeah. But here's the thing. I always go back, well, who's the worst president, Trump or Bush? And I go, well, I mean, Trump did start a war that killed thousands of people and thousands of Americans without cause.
Bush,
yes. Yeah. Trump hasn't done that yet, so I always go back. I don't want to necessarily go.
We don't want Trump to start a war because it may kill the world.
If Trump starts a war, it's because he feels he needs to politically. I don't feel that that was W's reason to start a war. I think W had other reasons. But if Trump starts a war, it's because he thinks it helps him politically. I don't doubt that. I feel I know what motivates this guy. But so what would you like to see? Would you like to see there be like a fundraiser? I mean, I'm sure
I think there should be a fundraiser. I think there should be more national attention. I think I would like to see people on social media and on the 24-hour news cycles reacting to what happened to these churches. It's not going to happen. One, because it's African American churches.
First of all, obviously, it was covered.
And nobody gives bottom line is nobody gives a rat's ass.
I don't know about that.
It was not covered.
If it wasn't covered, you and I would not be talking about it.
Well, it was covered.
All right, it was covered. Yeah. So it wasn't ignored.
Yeah.
So now, does the news always the news is obsessed, all the news channels, with President Trump. A lot of real news doesn't make its way in there, but that was before Trump. You know, the news doesn't focus on meat and potatoes necessarily like that. But, I mean, are we really surprised? I mean, we've seen Jews murdered in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
We've seen Muslims murdered in New Zealand. We've seen Christians murdered in Sri Lanka. Are we really surprised?
How is a 21-year-old guy this angry?
We saw it in Charleston in a church. I mean,
how are you that angry at 21?
Dallas? We saw a guy picking off police officers in Dallas. We're not surprised by shit anymore.
Yeah.
We just, Parkland. We saw that a year ago. We're not surprised by shit anymore.
Yeah.
It's just another day. You just look away because if you really pay attention, you want to kill yourself.
It will drive you crazy.
I mean, so in the grand scheme of things, is it terrible that these historic churches were burnt down? Absolutely. But thankfully nobody lost their lives. You know, maybe
did that change the game?
I think it does. I think it does. I think if you found out this church was burned down and there was people praying inside and people lost their lives, yeah, I think it does. I'm not saying it's right, but I think that's the calculus.
Well, I disagree with you. Was Dylan Roof killed people in the basement of the church and he went to Burger King when they caught him?
but he was crazy. But they caught him and, you know, he's going to spend life in jail.
Yeah.
But that was a major news story.
That's because
people died.
People died.
Right. And I'm saying thank you.
And our president brought it, kept it in, you know, he went down there. He was at the service.
This guy ain't going to do that. You got to say.
Oh, I'm glad that didn't happen on Trump's watch. It would be, you know.
Listen, you can't expect, you know, Trump's not, he's not empathetic. Even his supporters will tell you that. I mean, some people still think he really cares about them. That's fine. I'm done trying to convince people. But, you know, empathy is not this man's game.
No.
So, I mean, how would he really be? Do they really want him in that community? Yes, it would be nice. He should have gone. But you know what? When he went to Pittsburgh and the synagogue, there was people that didn't want him there either. Now, he was greeted by the rabbi of the church, but I don't think the mayor wanted him there at that time. This guy's a controversial figure. There's a lot of places that don't want him.
That is true. We'll have him here if he could show up tonight, though. We'll have him in Joe's chair.
What would happen here? He would be asked questions that he can't answer, and he would look stupid because he's not an intelligent man, and he doesn't have command of the facts. And I don't take kindly to being lied to my face. That's what would happen here. But he would never do that.
He would never come into Davin's den.
He would never
with his Secret Service.
No. Joe Curry stands up to more of a withering and a blasting on a weekly basis than Donald Trump ever could. Because Donald Trump's a bitch. Yeah, I mean, that's just the reality. So, I mean, you say what you want. You know, people paint these, like, paintings of him being tough and everything. It's just not true. You got to do your research. I don't really want to go off on all Trump stuff.
Right? No, I don't either. But I was just.
But, listen, would it be nice if more attention was paid to these churches? Sure. I'm not really surprised. How much are we talking about Notre Dame? It was a week ago. We're not talking about it much anymore. We've moved on. It's not even a 24-hour news cycle anymore.
Well, no, because another disaster happened. The Sri Lanka.
The Sri Lanka, yeah.
Yeah, which is,
you know,
absolutely.
And the president did the right thing, and he sent his condolences. You know, would have been nice if he does that when Muslims are killed. He does not, generally, unfortunately. But, yeah, I mean, listen. And they said Allegedly, ISIS is claiming responsibility for it now. Thought they were wiped out. And and this was supposed to be revenge for what happened in New Zealand. Listen, man, we got a lot of people who have a lot of mental illness doing terrible things. And clearly Western civilization is not as equipped as it would like to think it is to handle it.
No, it's not.
So what you do is you hug your loved ones, you tell them you love them, and you hope they're not in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, well, we're all sitting ducks, unfortunately, you know, so you're right about that, man.
We are. I mean, I think about it like I never thought. I'm sure.
I haven't been to a movie theater to see a movie or on a date in years. I refuse to go into a crowded movie theater.
Really?
I can't do it, man. I have not been to, me and Patricia and I have not been to a movie theater in over 6 years.
And that's because you're afraid of being shot?
Yes.
Really?
I'm afraid of sitting in a movie theater. I have not been to a movie theater. I won't go.
You used to go to the movies regularly?
Yeah,
we're
regular, frequent visitors
to
a movie
theater. Sort of what, that was
so like, now when something comes out that's hot, something comes out that's hot in the movie theater, I won't go. You know, and there's a lot of movies I want to see. I just wait till they come on. She's with me. She's terrified, too. I mean, she would not go into a movie theater.
So in a sense, you're living in fear.
Yes, I won't shop in.
During
the Christmas season, you won't catch me in a mall.
So have you thought to yourself, maybe I should get a gun? Has that thought crossed your mind?
I thought about it. You know, I thought about getting a gun, you know. I don't know if that's going to help, though.
Would you feel more
secure? Walking through the mall with a gun in my, you know.
Would you feel safer with a gun?
Yeah, I would. I would feel safe with a gun.
Well, that's the argument. Well, then you want good guys with guns. That's the argument for that.
But then you got to be in the right place at the right time. And
the argument is you want good guys with guns. Unfortunately, not everybody's a sharpshooter, and then you get a crossfire. But you personally would feel safer.
I'll feel safer.
So why haven't you gotten a gun?
Because I'm a traveling comedian and I'm an African American. So
the
last thing I need is a gun on me. Traveling from state to state.
Can't take it state to state.
Okay, and most of my, yeah, and so in New York, you know.
So, but in New York.
I get a permit for a gun in New York, maybe,
which is hard
yes,
to do.
Which is hard to do. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and it's hard to get a gun there also. The gun laws are very strict, like New York. So I don't live in a place where, you know, you can have a gun and without going through a bunch of red tape. Once again, I'm an African American. African American with a gun, even a good guy, is still dangerous. I mean, we saw what happened to the guy out in Minnesota, Castillo.
Orlando Castillo.
Philando, who had a gun legally, told the police officer he had a gun, and, you know, was asked to reach into the glove compartment to get his permit, and then he was shot like four or five times in front of his kid.
On live.
Yeah, and, on Facebook
police,
Live, yeah.
And the police got off on that.
And he got off, yeah. So, and yeah, he's a good kid. I mean, he's a good guy. He was taking care of the community.
You feel nervous that the bad guys are going to get you and that the good guys are going to get you?
Dude, you know, I juggle machetes in my car, in my stage act. I'm afraid to have those in my car. I mean, I drive, you know, most of my gigs are in the South, as you may know, and I travel a lot in the South in my car. So I'm in the Carolinas. I'm in Georgia. I'm in Florida in my car with New York State tags, by the way. Which is another sitting duck, you know, going through certain areas of the South, you
know.
I got pulled over one time for going too slow.
No, you probably stoned.
No, I wasn't stoned. A cop had a reason. He pulled me over. I was like 20 miles from the Florida state line. He goes, you know why I pulled you over, Mr. Lee? I go, no. He goes, you're going too slow. I go, what do you mean I was going too slow? I was doing 60. He goes, well, the speed limit is 70. Most people cruise at 75. So when I saw you doing 60, it made me suspicious.
That's ridiculous. So the gun violence in this country has affected how you live your life.
Yes, it has. I've not been to a movie theater. I would not go shopping at the mall during the Christmas season. And
really?
And I tell you what, if I do go to a mall now, I usually go into the if I go to a mall now, Davin, I usually walk into the mall like the department store I'm going to. I'll walk into a Macy's.
Okay.
And
so you're not walking around.
I'm not
going
to walk through the mall. I'm going to go to a Macy's. I'm going to go to the JCPenney's exit, you know, something like that. Or if I'm going to Best Buy, usually at a mall, Best Buy has their own exit. I'm going to go right. So that's about as much a mall I do is going to. You won't catch me in the food court of a mall. No.
Well, that you could die there for other reasons.
Having some Chinese food at a food court. Well, yeah, it has affected my life.
That's a terrible decision.
I never looked at it that way, but it has affected my life. Yeah, I've not gone.
I think my head's more on a swivel But I go, I live my life. I'm just, you know, I'm going to go to the mall. I'm going to go shopping. I'm going to go to the movies. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. If your time's up, you know, you don't want it to be up, but what am I going to do? Am I going to hang out in my basement and live in fear? That's not living.
Davin's Den is a good place to be.
It is a great place to be. It is a great place to be, but I don't have a Best Buy down here. I mean, I think about it, and I've talked about this on the air. I think about in comedy clubs. I think about what happens if somebody gets pissed off at me. What happens if a crazy person comes in here? Because at comedy clubs, your back's against the fake brick wall. There's usually no place to hide.
Now, have we had incidents in comedy clubs other than the minor ones? We haven't had nobody killed. No comedians have been killed by an audience member.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I won't be surprised when that happens. I think
I won't be surprised.
That's we're on our way.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens for a chain that you and I both work for.
Yes, I mean I'm not. I wouldn't.
I'm not going to say the chain, and it's not necessarily a reflection on the chain. It's just.
Now, I've been attacked on stage.
I've been attacked. I've been attacked off stage.
Yeah, so I had somebody throw a beer at me one time in Newport News. The lady threw a beer at me. Yeah, I was picking on her boyfriend. She didn't like it, and she stood up and threw a beer on my nice $400 suit. In the middle of my set.
Well, your first mistake was wearing something that expensive to Newport News. I know the club. It's a fine club, but slow down. That's a little much for
Come
that
on,
club.
Man. I'm a player.
Stop it. Stop it. Put on your Michael Jackson t-shirt and jeans and call it a night. You also have that in your wardrobe as well.
That is in the wardrobe.
So stop it. Yeah, no, I think about it in the city when I'm working in the city. I'll be working in the city tomorrow night. And, you know, a lot of times I'm on these late shows. I'm like, you know, somebody could just walk right in. Not like anybody's working the door, really.
And the city clubs are mostly tourists. And mostly people from overseas tourists, not just tourists.
Right, but a crazy person just walks in and kills people.
Yeah.
I don't think
that would happen before. I think somebody being mad at a heckler would be. I think a comedian who does crowd work, who picks on people.
Why are you looking at me, Kev?
Well, I fall in that category, too.
You do?
So, guys
but like you got a machete and a chainsaw.
So, guys like us may become a victim of a disgruntled guy before some guy just walks to a comedy club with a machine gun and guns everybody down. That's
what
I'm thinking.
I also talk about shit people don't want to hear about.
Well, they don't know that unless they're in the audience.
Right, right, right. Yeah, in the audience. I'm talking about, I set people off. You know what? I'm talking about politics. I'm talking about race. I'm talking about religion. I'm talking about child abuse. It's a really fun show, lighthearted show, Kevin.
Well, I mean, so does a lot of comics who haven't been, I mean.
Oh, no, a lot of comics don't anymore. A lot of comics do not, especially politics.
Yeah.
Because the clubs don't want them to.
Well, some of the big stars, like Wanda Sykes, does political. She bashes Trump on.
Well, all right.
I think she slowed down a little bit. I haven't, you know.
Let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Wanda Sykes is not known as a political comic. Dennis Miller, Jon Stewart now,
yes.
Bill Maher, those are known as political comics. That's never really been Wanda Sykes' thing. If you want to hear, now we say, all right, Wanda's going to talk about her girlfriend or her wife.
Right. And she does.
Right.
Yeah. But she's not.
And
she talks about her kids.
Wanda's going to be observational about stuff. You don't expect Wanda to get on a soapbox.
Because it's personal with Wanda, though.
I understand that. But I'm saying an audience member.
Right.
Even if they YouTube Wanda's clips.
Yeah, they won't see her.
Right.
So when they go there and they drop $100 to see her, $150 to see her, a lot of them don't know that she's going to go off on Trump.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's going to take them aback. Now, I haven't seen Wanda do it, but I'm guessing from what you say and from what I've read, it's kind of preachy. It's kind of like I'm right, you're wrong type
of thing. Well, no, she's black. And second, it does, and she's gay.
Listen, I'm not saying she's right or wrong, but what I'm saying is
what I'm saying is all the things she's talking about is all the things the Trump administration basically has lined up against her lifestyle.
I'm not saying she can or can't say it.
Right.
What I'm saying is I'm listening to her. I'm not expecting this, and I believe in Donald Trump, and you're sitting there telling me how bad he is. You're calling me a bad person. That's how it could be perceived. I'm not saying it's right.
No, I don't really felt that's the way she goes. I think she does like any other comedian who gets in his ass, you know?
No, I don't think that's right, and I'll tell you why it's not right.
I work with a comedian over the weekend who featured for me down in Greenville, South Carolina, which is Trump country, and he went on stage, and he did some anti-Trump stuff. He also softened it up by doing some anti-Obama stuff. But he is an Obama fan. But he throws that in there to soften the blow. He figured if he does an anti-Obama joke, that he can get away with bashing Trump.
Well, there's something to that. But just because you're an Obama fan, which I was, doesn't mean you can't do Obama jokes, which I did.
Yes.
Now, comedically, he just wasn't that interesting. I mean, unless you want to go on the racist shit, like they're going to have a cookout in the Rose Garden with chicken. And
no, you mean like he's going to the racist stuff, like he's going to – he has three different wives, a bunch of different kids, and he's going to hire all his friends and family to work in the White House.
Well,
you mean
no,
like
that's,
that?
That's the guy in the office.
Yeah, right yeah, 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 yeah. So Trump's the first black president.
Right. No, but unless you – listen, I had some stuff. I don't remember what it was. But it was about when I think it was about before Obama became president, when he gave that big speech on racism before he was president, because he had all the
yes.
the Reverend Wright stuff going on. So he gave this epic speech about racism, and his grandmother, his grandmother was white, and I don't remember what the joke was, but the punchline was, you know, something like. Obama's grandma, white grandma, heard that and said, "Nigga, please." That
was, that's funny.
Yeah, that was it. So I was doing shit, and I like Obama.
Right.
I've always liked Obama, but I'm doing it if something's funny. I'm just not going to do it.
Right, you're not going
to, just to soften it. But I understand why you do, and I do make fun of other things, other people in the act. But there's a difference between getting in somebody's ass and making fun of them,
right?
And preaching. And I'm not saying one's right or wrong. I'm just saying if you're preaching, especially if they don't know who you are or you're a political comic, it's going to turn people off.
Well, if you spend $150 to go see somebody, you should know who they are.
I agree. but until the first couple of times it happened, nobody knew Wanda was going to get on a soapbox because she hadn't done that. You think Wanda's always the lovable neighbor. She does voices and shit. She's always likable. Most people aren't.
In the movies, you know. But
but you don't think Wanda's.
Do you follow her on Twitter?
I don't think most people do either. I don't think most people who see her, they know her from TV. They know her from the movie. She's a lovable lady. She's always a sidekick.
Yes.
She's got a cute voice. I don't think most people know that she's a lesbian. Obviously, they know she's African-American, but she's one of the good ones. They don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have this.
They don't know that she's angry at Trump.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, you know, and that's nobody's fault. And certainly as an artist, Wanda has every right to express that. But as an audience member, I get it too. I go, all right, this is not what I signed up for. And they get pissed. Nobody's wrong in that equation. I understand both. I understand both. You just have the artist if you're going to go down that road.
Okay, so Wanda Sykes come out on stage and decides to go bash Obama, or nobody's going to walk out. Is
but
my point.
But these, but
if
these,
she says that
these
fucking
Trump
Obama was an asshole.
These Trump supporters are the most sensitive political supporters I see. Listen, I've been at this a long time. I had Clinton jokes. Didn't have a problem with them. Everybody had them. I did Clinton jokes in front of fucking Monica Lewinsky. True story. I had W jokes. People tell me to run for president when I was doing that shit. I had some Obama jokes. That was probably the harshest one I had. Never got shit for it. I got a boatload of Trump jokes. Those are the ones that have got me in trouble, and I get in a way a lot less trouble than other people do.
Right.
But, the Trump supporter, ironically, and I've spoken about it before, and Joe knows this too. Joe would say the same thing. They're more, and Jamie, who we work for at the Carolina Comedy Club, who voted for Trump, is a Republican. But he'll tell you the same thing, and he actually has some Trump jokes. He'll tell you the same thing. It happened on my show. The Trump fans, some of them, not most of them, but a percentage of them, are the most sensitive comedy fans as far as politics we've ever seen.
Yes.
So, yes. Wanda could get up there and light into Barack Obama, and nobody's going to say boo. Right. But there's something with this guy, and that's what happens with your cult leader.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, man. He's a cult leader.
So here's where it's gotten to me. Now, you know, I like you, we tour nationally. You know, we're not regional guys. We hop in the car. We hop on the plane. We're bringing the act. Wherever the fuck we go, this is the act. At both points in our career, it's like, this is the act. We're not really changing much anymore. This is why we got to where we are. We've been doing this long enough. Love it or hate it, this is what we do. Fortunately, more people like it than don't like it, but it is what we do. Now, I go into the Deep South. I go into the Midwest. I go all over the flyover states like you do in Trump country, and I do this shit. And I make fun of Trump. I make fun of him a lot. I also have a couple things about Hillary. I also got some shit about the media because nobody is impervious. Now, here's what I get away with it a lot more, and I got these couple compliments. My buddy's new wife, who's been working at the club for a year and a half at their comic club. So she sees a lot of comics.
Okay.
So she saw my first show on Thursday, which was a lot of fun. We'll get more into it when Joe gets here. She pulls me over on Saturday. She goes, I've seen a ton of comics. She goes, I think you do politically best I've ever seen that's come through here, because we don't know what you really think. And then later on that night after a show, people come up to me, and this has never happened before. They go, who'd you vote for? I go, well, who do you think I voted for? I'm curious, who do you think I voted? The guy goes, oh, you're a Trumplet. Like, no, I voted for Hillary. So they don't know. But here's the thing. I'm tearing into Trump's ass.
Right.
I'm making fun of him, but I'm not saying you're evil for voting for him. And I'll have that in my audience. It happened on the other, like I asked a guy on the Thursday show, very small show we'll get into. Anybody vote for Trump? Guy goes, yeah. He goes, he voted for Trump. I go, okay, why'd you vote? I always ask people why I vote. And I never go, oh, you're wrong. And he goes, because I wanted him to drain the swamp. Now, on this show, on the radio show, I'd go, well, that was a fucking mistake. But in my comedy show,
right.
It's not the place for it. But another woman, a liberal woman, starts going, ooh, like he's wrong. And I go, listen, stop. Wolf Blitzer's not coming here to moderate this shit. I'm up here for a certain amount of time. I'm not interested in us tearing each other apart.
We're breaking news.
Right. No, I'm interested in us all at laughing together. And here's the thing. You can bring people down a notch. And you can shift. You can't change. You can shift opinions if you show that these people are human and they all have mistakes and weaknesses. And that's what I do with Trump. I don't go, you're a fucking idiot because you believed him. Even though I may think somewhere along that line, I'm not going to, because you know what? People want to believe shit. Listen, Barack Obama sold us a bill of goods too. And it was the type of bill of goods that you and I, it scratched us where we itch. Did he deliver and everything? No. And was I a cult member? Absolutely not. I would call him on his shit. But there were plenty of people that treated Barack Obama like he was their boyfriend too. And when he would do, when he did the stupid red line shit with Syria,
yeah,
you know, they wouldn't call him on that. You know, so you got to call your boy. If you love your boy, I loved Obama.
Right.
You got to call him. You got to go, no, you need to do better. I got your back, but you got to do better. You can't bullshit.
In life, your bluff get called sometime, Davin.
Right.
His bluff got called. You're not going to start a war and get a bunch of people killed. He got his bluff called.
Right. That's just. And they all do it. And they all
exactly.
do it to a degree, but we've never seen it to this degree. But here's the thing. And like I said, there were people that, oh, Obama's my boyfriend. I can't make fun. And Bill Maher would say he's not your boyfriend. There's a lot of people that think Donald Trump is their boyfriend. They got to stop. And what I'm doing is, I'm not saying you're wrong for voting for him or voting for him the next time, but I am going to make fun of his ass because there's a lot of I gave, like, this is one of the new jokes I got. I go, Donald Trump says some crazy shit. I'll give you an example. Donald Trump tells us, you know, folks, a lot of people don't realize this, but Abraham Lincoln was a Republican president. I'm like, we all know. Nobody knows. I go, I feel like Donald Trump is opening up Snapple bottle caps and reading a fun fact and sharing it with the group. I'm calling him on his bullshit, but I'm calling him on shit that we all recognize.
Right.
You go, I'm not saying you're stupid for it, but go, look at this guy. He thinks we're idiots or he doesn't know anything, and it's like he just learned something and he wants to share. But we all know fucking better.
He doesn't learn a lot. I mean, this is the same guy that said George Washington is not relevant and doesn't have a legacy. When the Washington Monument is right outside his bedroom window.
Just the city where he's living right now.
Yeah. You can look out his bedroom window and see the Washington Monument right there every day.
Right. But that's an example of something where you could bring to red state America.
Right.
And you could point it out, go, you know, George Washington is irrelevant. Is he aware of who the city's named after? Trump's naming buildings after this motherfucker named a capital after.
Like,
you can do that, and you'll get laughs, and you'll get people on board, and you're not having a political statement, but you are making – this guy's not infallible.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
How has this affected your career as far as you – has there been bookers who you felt –
I am sure.
Haven't booked you because of your stance.
I am sure.
You know, I got fired from I don't know if we talked about that. I got fired from a comedy venue because I did some crowd work and I called the waitress Stormy Daniels.
I don't know this story.
You don't know this story?
No. This is a good format for
me. Well, let's talk about it, man.
All right.
I was on stage and can I name the venue?
You can name whatever you want.
I'm on stage in the Poconos.
Okay.
Cohaven Resort.
Okay.
And it's a one-hour show, you know. I come out, I do an hour. And, you know, I do crowd work. You've seen me work 1,000 times.
Did you lose the other ones attached to it?
I'm banned from the venue.
From people who don't know, there's a lot of weeknight work at this club.
Yes.
Which comics are always looking for. And it pays pretty decent. And it's not too terribly far from where we live.
No, and it's a nice gig.
Right.
Now, my point is, I've been working this place for almost 10 years.
Really?
And I have a big fan base there. People love me there. I've gotten the accolades there. You know what I'm saying? Well, it took one waitress to complain to the management that I was picking on her. And that got back to the booker, who we both know. Scott Bruce.
Okay.
Okay, and then from there, they...
And Scott should know better. Scott's a comic.
And he's also a guy who does a lot of crowd work. From what I've never seen his act, but I hear he's a crowd work guy. Yes. You know, he's into the crowd.
Joke jokes and crowd work.
Yeah. So here, the management doesn't want me back on their venue now. No matter how many times I've killed there, had great sets, and
Scott wasn't going to fight for you.
He didn't bend over backwards. I got thrown under the bus because I called a waitress that walked by the stage, Stormy Daniels. That was it. That got me banned from a comedy venue that I've been working.
Was she buxom or
something? She wished she looked as good as Stormy Daniels. It was just something off the top of the head.
You don't think it's going to get you in trouble?
You know that routine, man. Something comes off the top of your head. You're on stage. You're in the zone. The crowd's eating at the palm of your hand. And, you know.
That's when it happens. Once we leave script, it all goes down.
When I'm on stage, everybody's, you know, a victim. You know, you see my work. I mean, I pick on everybody, man. And you know. I call myself the Don Rickles of magic. So, that's what I do, man, you know.
You're not nearly as aggressive as Don Rickles. You're not. You're not. You're
but Don
not.
Rickles could not survive in today's environment.
No. There's Lisa Lampanelli. I tell you, whatever happened to me at Catch a Rising Star?
Wait a minute. Go back to Lisa. Lisa is like Don Rickles?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know much about Lisa's act. But
Lisa makes fun of. That's what Lisa's act is.
She's like a female Don Rickles, sort of.
I think she's the female build. She was the queen of mean.
Okay, I got you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Lisa has thrived. If you're politically correct, I think she left comedy, but
she has a following, is why she thrived.
Right, no, but she has thrived where others might not at this point.
Okay.
So, interesting story. Years ago, Catch a Rising Star, I've been working for that club years. So when I was featuring there. So I used to have a joke about gangster rap and DMX. I can't really. Joe used to get into my ass about doing the joke, but it was an applause break joke. And, I'd be like, you know, but I'm a young Jewish kid from the suburbs. So DMX had a song that like, "Where my niggas at? Where my niggas?" I said, "Where my niggas?" I go, "Prison," but I, and he was in prison. And I go, "Well, but I'm a white Jewish kid from the suburb. Where would my phrase be? Where my heebs at? Where my heebs at? Represent the niggas, like they're lawyers and everything."
Right. Gotcha.
So this was applause break joke. Applause break.
And, that's very racist, by the way.
It's not fucking racist. Fuck you.
It is racist.
No, black people love the joke because it's fucking his lyrics. It's DMX's lyrics.
Right, I got you.
If it's racist against anybody, it's against Jews being lawyers.
No, so you are a comedian who, for your audience, you headline mostly mainstream comedy circuits, which means 98% of your audience are Caucasians.
Well, we'll get into that in a second. That's not necessarily true. But here's what happened. That's not true.
I know the rooms you work. What do you mean it's not true? We work the same rooms.
But I work black rooms.
Okay.
But anyway, never had a problem. Didn't have a problem with that show.
Right.
Nobody complained that show. So the waitress who'd been there for years, Wendy, she calls the booker and complains that black people could be offended because nobody's been offended yet. I've been working there for years. Could be offended because of that joke.
Because of that joke.
And Kevin's like, oh, just apologize to her. She did this to somebody else. And that's where I came up with the phrase for some of the wait staff, just serve the nachos, cunt.
Oh, that'll get you.
So I never apologized. But he knew it was bullshit.
Right, right.
But I've told this story on there. I'm not a coward when it comes to comedy.
Right. I know you're not. Yeah.
I just did Harlem for the first time. I talked about this on the air. I'd never done Harlem before. I've done enough black rooms. I mean, not as much as I used to.
Well, I was on Def Comedy Jam. You can't get no blacker than that.
You're black.
My act's not. No.
But play the Klan rally.
I got the most. I don't work a Klan rhino. You got a check for me? No, I'm the most mainstream black comic there is, almost, right? I mean, act.
I walked into Harlem. You could fucking feel the people looking at me like, this guy doesn't belong. I was the only white dude. Forget about the only white comic on the show.
Right.
I was the only white person in the place. They were looking at me when I walked in. They were looking at me as I walked through. I mean, my buddy had me inviting me there to perform. And I went up and I did my shit. And by the end, they're hugging me, loving me, this, that, the other thing. I can do black all rooms. But that's not the point. I'm down in Columbia, South Carolina. I've told this story a lot of times on the air. I'll tell it briefly. Comedy House Theater. You ever do it?
Yes, I have.
So you know, back in the day, it's not there anymore. Back in the day, there was mainstream shows,
yes,
mainstream weeks,
mm-hmm,
and black weeks.
Yeah.
That's what. Which weeks were you doing?
Well, every comedy, I did both weeks because I could play both crowds, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, for some reason, and I traditionally done, as you would imagine, the mainstream weeks.
Okay.
For some reason, they booked me on a black week. Okay. And Headliner is J.J. Ramirez, crowd work guy. Latino guy. Yeah. He can play anywhere, too. So I'm featuring. And I had good shows. But two shows, and I said to myself, am I going to do the niggas bit or not? The one where my niggas. At the time, it was a really good joke for me. It would still work today. It was an applause break joke. I'm like, you know, and I said to myself, I've talked about it in the air, I said to myself, well, if I can do this joke in front of mixed and white audiences, I have to do it in front of this room with 300 black people. I have to. Otherwise, I don't deserve to be able to tell this joke. If I'm afraid of this word, then I don't get to say the word. Not that as a white Jewish person, I get to own the word, but I'm using it as a joke in context. I'm not calling people that.
Right, right, right.
But if I'm gonna have the audacity to do this in my act and to use a word that is so charged.
Well, you're using, you're kind of piggybacking on DMX. Almost, right. Almost like a ventriloquist who says racist stuff.
But it was DMX's lyrics.
But the puppet saying racist stuff.
Right.
Never the guy, right?
Right. But it is DMX's lyric. You know DMX.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Very
aggressive. I love DMX. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. You never think, well, he's afraid of the N word. No, he's dropping it like it's hot, Kev. So I go, you know what? I'm gonna do this joke. I have to do the joke. I did the joke the whole week. It worked great the whole week, except for two fucking shows. And those 300 black people hated me. And they and black people, when they hate you, they will let you know.
They'll let you know very, really quick.
They're like booing me. I'm going, I would throw a book at you, but you wouldn't know what to do with it. Because I'm not going. And the club is like trying to get me off the stage after 7 minutes. I'm supposed to do 25, 30. And I'm like a pitcher looking in for the sign and not liking a fucking shit.
No, you got to get off, man. That 7 minutes is up. Get off.
They moved me up to headliner after that. But
that's funny.
But
you said something pretty interesting about Black Knight and White Knights. You know when this all started, right? When Def Comedy Jam became a big hit. In this country, I mean,
white people accepted
in 1992. Def Comedy Jam was the hottest show in the country. Mm-hmm. Period. I was on the show. Thank you. Anyway, but it was the hottest show in the country. Comedy became segregated at that point. All the mainstream clubs wanted a so-called Apollo night or Def Jam night. Mm-hmm. So they start using black comics to do, you know, these Thursdays and Wednesday nights and Sunday nights, and this place would be jam-packed, sold out, all sell out. And then they wouldn't book these black comics on the weekends.
I think that changed, though, because I'd start working with these black comics.
Because, I mean, I was one of the guys who was
You know what? No, I'm wrong. Here was the difference. So what you start to have was a separation in the black comedy community, the black comics that could work those black rooms and knew how to do it, and then the black comics who could never figure out, was never accepted in those black rooms, but would kill in the white rooms by pandering up to the white audience. Like doing stereo, you know what they say.
Yeah.
Once you go black, you get bad credit. That type of shit.
Yeah.
So you actually saw
a lot of that still going on.
Right, and I always hated it. I always hate being on the bill with those guys.
Hey, Ben, you know it's the same with like with white guys who rap on stage.
I did that at one point.
I hate that.
I did freestyle.
Stand it.
Well,
when a white guy raps, it's an applause break, and it's such
lyrics.
A sellout.
Hold on.
Piece
well,
of crap.
Yes and no. First of all, I had original lyrics. I had original music recorded for it. There was a rap. Then I freestyled. So I was doing some shit in the moment. The problem was I got no rhythm. That's no stereotype. That's just the reality.
Okay.
But listen, I get why everybody was doing it at one point.
I mean, it just when you work with a white comic and he does a rap bit, it's just such like, oh, come on, are you serious? Are you rapping now?
You know what they say about the white comic who closes with rap? And now for your feature. I mean, now for your headliner.
It's a freaking...
But audiences eat that shit. Black audiences eat that shit up.
Yeah, they eat it up. Well, black audiences are always going to treat a white guy that's bold enough to go in front of them better than they're going to treat a black comic.
Oh, that's not true, my friend.
Oh, I've been on shows, some of these so-called Def Jam shows, and places like the Funny Bones and stuff like that. I mean, the first time I ever worked for a Funny Bone was in Virginia Beach back in the early 2000s. I went down to play that, and I got the call from a booker named John X who called me up because another comedian by the name of Tony Woods was canceled at the last moment, so they had me come in. Sorry, Tony. They had me come in and do the show, and I get there, and it's one of those Apollo nights, and I was walked in.
How does your stuff work?
Of course, I walked in with the ego of my regular ego.
Like, does it
my
work?
Stuff kills in front of black crowds?
I was
just on the Capital Jazz Cruise with Earthquake, Tommy Davidson, and Mark Carey, and I got a stand ovation in front of an all-black crowd. So, yeah.
Yeah, but those cruise ship black people are different than shitty one-night or nightclub black people. Cruise ship black people have money. They want to be – I want to be entertained. I expect a lot.
And it's different. You know what the difference is? I can tell you the difference is because I've done a lot of these type of shows we're talking about. If they're done – I did one of those shows where the knucklehead crowd was there in the audience, but it was inside of a real comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you an edge.
Okay.
Then you've done these type of shows – in some sort of venue that shouldn't have comedy.
Yeah, man.
It's almost like even in the mainstream room, we do one nighters.
I'd be in Atlanta doing these like one nighter small rooms.
Yeah.
All black southern, and the southern black audience is different than a northern black.
Yeah,
audience.
But I mean, it's the same thing with mainstream rooms. Though we've done one nighters in places that shouldn't have comedy.
Yes, that's true too.
Right. So,
there's no more vocal audience whether they love you or hate you than a black audience, and I appreciate.
When
black audiences love, there's no better audience.
Oh, there's no better audience.
When they hate you, you know.
Yeah.
They don't sit there and stare at their phone.
No,
they're
going to
tell you.
People, yeah.
But I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But I'm fine with that.
They let you know. Now, I've had my problems. I've killed all sorts of, you know, African-American audiences. And I've it all depends just on the night, man. It's like any other thing, man. It's the night. I've been in front of the black crowds. I mean, I've been on all the BET shows.
So you already have that credit.
I've been on Def Comedy Jam. Showtime at the Apollo back in the day. So I've been on all of these shows, you know.
You know how I walked into that fucking Harlem room? I shit you not. This is how I walked into that Harlem room. I had my Aerosmith sneakers on. I had a New Jersey Devils hockey jacket on.
Oh, wait a minute. The hockey jacket, you should got your ass whipped right away for walking into the black room.
And I had a rock, like some rock band.
I recommend t-shirt. A Kobe jersey next time.
and a rock band T-shirt on.
Oh my God!
I walked in.
Did you have any black friends you could have called, man, and got some advice?
I have no black. No, but that's what it is. I'm like, you know what? If just what I grabbed. If I'm gonna walk in and do this, I'm not gonna be scared. I'm gonna fucking go right at you the way I would.
That's
any
the
other
problem in America, man.
I'm not scared of black people.
No, most people with Jewish and white people, don't have a lot of black friends.
I don't know if I don't
there's
know
a statistic on that. That I mean, that,
no, I believe that.
Yeah, I mean,
because there's not because black people are mostly in the cities. You're not going to find too many black.
That's
people.
That's not true.
You're not going to find too many black people in the suburbs of Iowa. They're there, but there's not a lot of them. Or the suburbs of
Iowa. You wouldn't pull Iowa out.
Or Nebraska. You'll find them in the cities.
Well, that's yeah.
Well,
let's go to a normal place. Nebraska and Iowa is not fair to mention black people in the same cities.
No, these are states, though. That we these are states. Most black people live.
Only black in Iowa is black bears.
What I'm saying is most black people tend to live closer to the cities. They're more urban environments. The mass population centers of black people are in.
Wait
cities.
A minute, you have black people in this neighborhood you live in right here.
Not a lot. My daughter has.
Well, you counting them?
No, but I'll tell you, my daughter has one African American friend. She's been friends with that girl for years. And my daughter's not racist. Her friend's a neighbor next door is an Indian girl. Has nothing with race. There's just not a ton of black people in this town. So if you were to tell me, you know, white people don't have black friends, yeah, I get that. How many black friends would I have if I wasn't a comic? I'd probably have a lot less. I had one black fraternity brother.
Right.
You know, I don't know if depending on my job, I might not have black friends. Fortunately.
So if you were a comic, you wouldn't know that many black people. That's what you're saying.
Right, and it's not because
you're
avoiding them.
Right.
It's just they're not in the circle where I am, per se, because there's not a lot in this community, per se. I remember when the first black person black family moved into my town growing up in the fourth grade, the Goodmans. I remember them. The daughter was in my grade. I mean, that was a bit. Now there's a lot of black people in that town. But, I mean, it's just the way it is. White people, you can't avoid us. But but I mean it's just the reality, and I don't think that's necessarily racist. You're a lot of people are wary of things if they don't know what they are. That's why so many people are wary of Muslims, because they've never had a Muslim friend. They don't know Muslims, so you're other. So if I've never had a black friend or a Jewish friend or a Muslim friend or whatever it is, you're different. And until you start hanging out and go, motherfuckers as fucked up as I am, laughs at the same shit I do, bleeds the same way, sharing this person's cool. Now you're not my black friend, you're just my friend.
Right.
But you need exposure to that. That's all what integration was about.
That doesn't music and television take care of that exposure thing? Shouldn't it?
To a degree, but no. There's not, you can't.
Because most white kids listen to black music or rap music.
Right,
most suburban kids in this neighborhood. Matter of fact, when I just pulled up to your to your studio here, there was I heard rap music blasting out of somebody's car that was taking off, you know. One of your neighbors was pulling off. I had a moonroof open, right. And I could hear rap music blasting, like, you know.
Like,
so,
like, I think it's a gateway. It's like, I like this. This is a black culture or whatever it is. But it's not the same as breaking bread, hanging out,
right.
Having conversations with, hanging out with one's family who's of a different culture, race, religion. It's just a different thing, man. That's why I love traveling. That's why I love it so much. That's, you know, fortunate thing about comedy. I have Muslim friends. I have African-American friends, lesbian friends, gay friends. I might not have all that shit. And to me, it doesn't matter. When I'm booking a show, are you funny or not funny? I don't give a shit.
Right.
And when I'm hanging out, are you cool people or not cool people? That's really all I care about. But maybe I'd be a lot more sheltered if I didn't choose this path. I probably would be a lot more sheltered.
Yeah, if you worked a 9-to-5 in a cubicle, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, and listen, you've probably been exposed to a lot more Jewish people than you may have been. Otherwise.
Yeah, my management is Jewish.
Well, not the Thomas?
No.
No.
I had other management people that were Jewish. I've had some Jewish management over the years.
But you
plenty,
wouldn't be exposed
yeah.
to. People get wary of shit they don't know.
Yeah. I'm in the entertainment industry, so, I mean, there's
Jews
a lot of Jews.
There's a lot of Jews there. But
you think?
I do. But listen, man, I mean, you just... Black audiences are like...
I'm looking for a Jewish guy Saturday.
Yeah, that guy sucks. Black audiences are like any other audience. You can't show any fucking fear. The black audience will just let you know they're on to you a little quicker.
Yeah.
You can't show any fear. And that's what I did, man. When I did that room in Harlem, I was only doing 5 minutes. So it wasn't a big deal. But the biggest black guy sitting right in front of me, and no staring at my crotch, I'm immediately fucking going after him. I went after the biggest black guy, started goofing on him, and you know, by himself, fucking hug. Because I'm like, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm goofing on the black girl over there. Not going to be afraid. I'm going to bring it to you. And I'm going to do my jokes. And it's not going to be jokes catered to black people or yeah. white people. These are the fucking jokes now.
It's a mental game, you know. Yeah, I mean, I felt that way when I was on Showtime at the Apollo. And I was a guy who was doing mostly mainstream, you know, all mainstream. And I was with Sinbad in Atlanta.
Sinbad's a mainstream comic.
And he asked me, he's hosting the Apollo at the time.
I know, which is kind of interesting.
And he asked me, you know, he says, you want to do the Apollo? So I ended up doing the Apollo, and Sinbad was the host, and I come out, and, you know, as mainstream as I am, I went out and did well in front of that crowd, but it's because they never seen an African-American doing what I was doing also, you know, the style of comedy that I was bringing to them. They were amazed by it.
There's not a ton of comics, period, doing what you're doing.
That is true.
So then to add African-American.
Well, because the guys that do what I do are mostly white guys.
There's not a ton of those guys going to comedy clubs. On a cruise ship, sure.
Yeah.
But you know, doing...
In the comedy club circuit, I mean, you had the Amazing Jonathan.
Right.
In the early years, maybe Harry Anderson, a couple guys like that. But
those guys, no disrespect, are on a different level. So you're not going to see them coming through their local club.
Right.
Those guys, you know, Amazing Jonathan's in Vegas. Harry Anderson's been on, you know, was on TV in the 80s.
Yeah, on TV in
these
the
guys
80s,
are on
yeah.
a different level. So it's very rare for a guy like you to roll in town, or even a Gemini to roll. It's not a lot. They get a lot of Jewish, short Jewish guys, you know, slinging jokes. They get a lot of that.
Right.
They don't get a lot of guys juggling swords and, you know, eating flames, let alone a black guy, which makes you exotic in some of these towns to begin with.
No, that is true.
You know.
That's absolutely true.
That's why we say, don't compare what Kevin Lee does to what I do. Yeah, we work the same places, but it's completely different things.
Yeah. I mean, we bring a different flavor, big time. You know, we're night and day on stage, actually.
Are we?
Unless you're...
Are we Ebony and Ivory?
We are Ebony and Ivory. Unless you start juggling chainsaws.
I have no desire to juggle chainsaws.
I can teach you.
You probably could.
You can learn.
I'm sure
you need something
new
in your act, Davin.
I need a lot of new things.
This will get you to the status you want to be in, man. There's some rooms you want to headline. Chainsaw will get you in those rooms.
I'm sure it will, one way or the other.
It's got me in there.
I'm sure. But you know what? But, you know, listen, it's just not where my humor is.
Right.
You know, like, that's why, this guy's a prop actor or a puppet. Well, if that's where their humor is, that's fucking fine. That's where your humor is.
But I don't build myself as a prop comic. I don't people do. I hate to be put in that box.
You're not a comic, dude. You're not a comic. You're an entertainer. They have to call you something.
I want to be called an entertainer.
That's what you are.
Better than a comic.
There's a little bit of everything in your act. You say some funny shit, but you're not... You're not slinging jokes the way me or Joe Curry would sling jokes. You're an entertainer. You're going to goof on some people. You're going to do some misdirection magic and everything. You're going to make the audience look like the fool sometimes. Sometimes you'll be the fool. But you're not a stand-up comedian. You're a comedian.
Yeah.
You're not a stand-up comedian.
No, I'm not
you're
a stand-up comedian.
No, you're an entertainer. So it's foolish for places to go, oh, well, you're no Kevin Lee or blah, blah. No, I'm not Kevin Lee. I can't do what Kevin does, and Kevin probably couldn't do what I do. Just how does the audience enjoy it? That's all you need to worry about. You that's if the audience audience leaves happy either way, then Kevin and I are both doing our job.
Well, I hope this don't bore the shit out your audience, but you know, like guys like me and Jim and I, we're night and day also, but we get compared a lot. Yeah, he's a guy who does magic and comedy, or comedy and magic, but then there's people that say, oh, we don't want to bring Kevin Lee, and we have Jim and I on our roster, you know. And so,
why can't you both be on the roster? I mean, I wouldn't.
We're talking about bookers now.
I know. I wouldn't put you in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
But, you know what? I'm seeing a lot less of guitar acts. And that might be
that's a good thing.
It might be because I'm not really featuring much anymore. And when I was featuring,
I think guitar acts are dying down. I think the guys the guitar acts that are still around are old. And
I'm old.
Some of them are old. Yeah,
Kevin, I'm old.
I'm older than you.
Yeah, I didn't say you're young.
But some of these guys that, you know, that were around in the 80s and in the early 90s, they're now really old.
These are the guys.
Because most guitar acts that I know were headlining when I started out.
Right.
And then when I became a headliner in the late 80s and early 90s, these guys were on their last leg. So they're
a whole,
dying breed.
There was a whole crop I was working for.
There's no new comics coming out right now going to open mics going, I want to be a guitar act.
There's not a lot of them.
No.
I'm sure there are some.
Because most guys are discouraged. I mean, most bookers discourage them from even bringing out a guitar.
Really?
I think a guitar act is that the lowest of the totem pole in the industry?
Listen, man.
Next to mime?
No. The lowest for me is somebody whose act is all stolen.
Right.
That's the lowest for me. Then somebody's doing jokes. And then, you know.
But jokes, I mean.
No. You know what the problem
is? Roddy Dangerfield's one of the funniest fuckers that ever walked this planet. He did jokes.
Here's the problem with jokes. Jokes makes the average person in the audience think they can do what I do. Now, if I'm doing what I do well, it looks easy. But it's not easy. Especially on
Are you not a fan of Dangerfield?
Has nothing
to do with it. You can be honest.
No, I mean, I like him. I'm not a student of any of their games. I mean, Rodney's funny. I like the whole no respect thing, that whole thing.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm not a fan of jokes. My dad could tell jokes. I can't tell them. I'm not good at telling party jokes. It doesn't stop me from hiring comics. Like, I have comics on my roster who have jokes in their act.
Well, there's not a lot of joke guys left down, are there? I mean,
yeah,
but there's a few we know.
But they'll close with it.
Right.
Or they'll use it as a crutch to, you know, when things aren't going well.
I don't think.
The only time it's acceptable in my mind is when you're doing a senior center and go, okay, I get it.
Right.
You know, this is nowhere near art. You're just trying to get a bad payday. I get it.
Name a real good guitar comic that you know. If you don't mind throwing his name out.
I think Paul Bond's a good guitar comic.
Okay. I've never seen his act, so I can't.
I think, you know, Gary DeLena, there's some.
Yeah.
There's some. Listen, I'm not a hater of it. I'm not a, you know, I like the guy. I like the guys who write original songs. I can't think of his name now. He's a guy out of the Midwest. He used to be on the Bob and Tom show all the time. Would write original songs. I think it's harder if you do original songs than song parody. I don't hate anybody. I'll hire guitar acts. I don't mind. I don't care. Just don't compare me to it and don't keep me in a spot because I don't have a guitar.
Yeah.
You know, listen, you know, our buddy down in Newport News used to compare me to, you know, musical acts and Fat Doctor. My act is nothing like that shit. I'm not doing the arms.
Right.
It is, you know. I'm not an African-American who's been a veteran of the scene down there. Don't compare me to him. I know he's beloved and shit, but don't compare me to him.
Well, I get the Jim and I comparisons, not John Peasy so much, but Jim and I more because he's more of a magician. I have people also, Chips Cooney, I mean, all these guys.
Chips Cooney, well, I
all these guys, man.
But Chips is...
People just see magic. They don't see style. They don't see... The energy level is different. The style is different. Everything that I bring to the table is different than those guys.
Yeah, of course it is.
They're more magicians than I am. I'm more of a comedian than a magician.
No, Chips is not more of a magician than you are.
Yeah, okay.
No, I mean, Chips is, you know, it's 10 minutes of fake magic. And it's obviously fake, and that's the shtick.
That's the shtick, yeah.
I mean, Gemini, I'm trying to remember his act. He's got a little bit of everything. He's got, you know, he's got the crowd work segment. He's got the ventriloquist segment.
Yeah.
He's got the magic segment. I mean, Gemini, listen, and these guys do very well, and I've hired them. Just don't compare me to them.
Yeah.
It's just different.
You know who you remind me of? No, I'm just kidding.
Listen, I'm sure, you know, I don't know. Maybe I remind you of somebody. I don't know who it would be, but I've never modeled myself after anybody. You know, you've seen me enough. I like to think I'm doing things. I don't know if they're...
You're like Jay Leno and Bill Maher had a baby.
Is that what I am?
Yeah.
If only. If only.
I think you're a combination of both of those guys. I'm serious about that.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a compliment.
It is a compliment because I'm a big Jay Leno fan. I'm my Bill Maher, but I'm a huge Jay Leno fan. Mm-hmm. But no, I think you're a combination of both of those. That is a compliment. Davin, that's a compliment.
Thank you. You know, listen, I've been a comedy fan my whole life, but I've never said I want to be like such and such. Why did was there comics that you said you wanted to model yourself after?
No, I mean, even the guys that I admired. I mean, I was a huge Eddie Murphy fan, but I didn't want to be Eddie Murphy.
Right.
You know, as you can see from my style, I didn't do Eddie Murphy.
It's nothing.
But I, you know, some of the guys that Ronnie Dangerfield. We just mentioned his name a minute. I'm having a brain fart on
Amazing
the radio.
Jonathan.
No, not at all. I'm being honest with you. Jonathan never made me laugh.
Really, I think he's funny.
I didn't say he wasn't funny. I say he made me laugh. I mean, you know.
Well, if he's funny, wouldn't you laugh?
I mean, all the gag stuff that he does, you know, I'm not taking anything. I mean, he's funny, very successful, and bless him, man. I'm not knocking him as an artist. I watch his set.
Scratch you where
I watch his set a lot. Well, you know, it's never made me laugh.
Here's the thing. You know how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
So what he's doing, you know how he does it. It's kind of like how if I'm watching a monologist, I know where the punchline is. I know
right,
where the
right.
This director
yeah.
is.
No, he's good at what he does. He just—I'm not a fan of the act. That's all. But gotcha. I mean, you know, he kicks butt. He kicks
hey,
butt.
Joe.
No doubt. Hey, what's
hey,
up, man?
How's it going?
Pretty good, buddy.
Good to see you.
Real quickly before we take our break, Joe, was there ever a comic you watched that you wanted to be like?
Yeah, Carlin.
Okay, you want so you saw that and you go, I want to be like that.
There was there's two. There was Cheech and Chong, and there was. Well, there was Carlin.
You don't have any of their habits.
Well, Carlin, those are the guys, as a lonely kid who lost his dad and lonely, these guys, this is in my bio, and first I heard George Carlin, made me smile, made me laugh. It got me, and then Cheech and Chong, we played Cheech and Chong's album, and it's what made me want to get into comedy. So much so, Cheech and Chong was at the Westbury Music Fair, and I went to see him. And when the show was over, I ran around the back like a teenage girl,
ooh,
waiting to see him.
And I've seen that look, ironically. We'll get into that in the next segment.
So I came out, and they came out, and I saw Cheech Marin, and I go, look, I just want to let you know. I explained the whole thing. You know, I was a lonely kid and stuff like that. And I go, I've been a comic at that point for 15 years. I go, you guys were the ones that made me want to do this, and I always wanted to thank you. Thank you.
Did you like emulate, like try to be like them?
Yeah.
Like because you'll see knockoffs like of like say Mitch Hedberg or Dana Cook. Like we saw a lot of those when those guys broke.
Yeah,
went to the mics and you saw a lot of the younger comics like, oh, they're clones of such and such.
So yeah. In the 80s, Eddie Murphy clones.
Absolutely. And that shit never shook.
Yeah.
Well, no, we still had Eddie Murphy clones.
Yeah. I would say the only comic that I would because I in my top five is Kinison. So if I go into a rant or something like that, I get loud like Kinison. But not emulate, but the same, you know,
okay.
Just the act out on being angry is not like Kinison, but is kind of influenced on Kinison.
Hmm. All right,
interesting.
We will we'll tell about our little tour. We'll talk about that. A lot of interesting things.
Hear about you guys' tour, man.
On the tour. We'll talk about that on the break. On the break.
Did you see him on the nightly news? In the next segment, we'll talk about Tourette. Where the fuck is my paper?
So Bill O'Reilly would be my influence.
Yeah, but he's off
that.
The air.
You saw Bill O'Reilly. That was an infamous clip. What was it like on Current Affairs? I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they were, but they weren't live.
Yes, they were.
Were they live? I thought the mics were on during a break. I don't think
I think
was
that
live.
Was more of a Lester Holt type guy.
He's my inspiration, Lester Holt. On the break, we got new music from JDXL with Disappear and Sophie Griffiths with Numb, and you can learn more about them at deucemusic.com when we come back.